This week on The Inswinger.
The common denominator between Liverpool, City, and Arsenal is that they dominate games, but like you said, they do it in different ways, and they're all effective.
You have to start playing like a big team, and United just don't play like they're a big club.
The personalities at Manchester United were too big for Ten Hag, and he couldn't get the buy-in.
You're already a few points behind Liverpool and City, and you play that well. I think you've got to go and win the game. You got to see it out.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to the Inswinger Podcast, Season 4, Episode 7. I'm Charlie DiMatteo, joined alongside
Harrison McGlashan.
It was a big weekend in the Premier League, not for the right reasons for Manchester United. We're going to get into the sacking of Erik ten Hag following their loss to my boys West Ham. We're also going to get into a clash at the top of the table at the Emirates between Arsenal and Liverpool. Thrilling, and decently entertaining 2-2 draw. Sometimes those big games produce duds, not this one. And then we're going to wrap things up with our random, not so random segment. Going to get into a combined 11 for Man United and Chelsea for the Premier League era. Those two teams are facing off this weekend. Going to be an interesting matchup to see how United fare in their first game under without Erik ten Hag as their manager. Post-sacking, and let's get into that. What led to Erik ten Hag's sacking was a 2-1 defeat at the hands of Julian Lopetegui's mediocre at best West Ham United at the London Stadium. It was a game that West Ham went in front through Crescencio Somerville, who came on as a halftime substitute, really bright in the second half, nicked a goal after a deflection from Danny Ings, who again was okay. Does he deserve a start? I don't know. United got back into the game with Casemiro, but a questionable at best penalty decision went against United. Bowen slotted away, 2-1 win for West Ham, and that was that for United and Erik ten Hag. Harrison, we felt like this one has been coming. This game is kind of a microcosm for everything that has gone wrong for Erik ten Hag. What do you make of just the entire situation, the result, and then Ratcliffe and Ineos' decision to let ten Hag go?
Yeah, I think we said last week he was a dead man walking, right? It was only a matter of time. I didn't actually think they'd pull the trigger this soon. It felt a bit like awkward timing. Maybe they'd wait till an international break. But it seems like some work has been done behind the scenes to bring in a replacement, which we'll get onto. But yeah, I didn't expect this to be the result that sunk United. West Ham haven't been in great form in the league by any means. Of course, neither have United, but I thought it was a tale of two halves. United should have been, I don't want to say away, but they should have been leading at halftime at least, and they weren't. And West Ham really put their foot on the gas in the second half, created a lot more chances, and you could argue deserved the win. Maybe a draw would have been a more fair result, but United flattered to deceive. Again, and you could blame the finishing, but it's the themes we keep seeing, inconsistency, the style of football. I mean, I think what really undid Ten Hag was, you know, when you don't get the results, you need to see some sort of progression. And the football just hasn't been there this season. You know, they gave him the transfer funds, they gave him his players, they gave him a chance, and he didn't take it. And they never really got going this season. Like I said, the football's been poor, and the results are even worse. I mean, they are in, what, 14th in the league, 2 points above Everton and Leicester. Like, that, it's just not good enough. And teams just don't seem to be afraid of United anymore. Old Trafford is not a difficult place to go, and when they come to your ground, you don't really fear that team. And I think the next manager coming in has to implement a style of play, and it doesn't have to be a carbon copy of Pep, but you have to start playing like a big team, and United just don't play like they're a big club. So, yeah, I think it was the right decision. It looks like it's going to be Van Nistelrooy, at least for now, but, yeah, I mean, Ten Hag, I feel for him. He seems like a good bloke. He won him a couple of trophies, but the football was never really there. He just couldn't get it going for reasons I don't quite know, because I think he had a lot of the players to do it, and we'll see if the next manager can do it. But yeah, just not good enough at the end of the day.
No, it was never good enough from Erik ten Hag. And I think where it went wrong for ten Hag is people will look to Ajax and it being a big club and the football they played, and they dominated the league and had success in the Champions League. And why wasn't Erik ten Hag able to translate at United? And I think the players and the personalities at Manchester United were too big for ten Hag, and he couldn't get the buy-in from the dressing room into the way he wanted to play, or if that was wasn't the case. He didn't know how he wanted to play because, as we said so many times, we saw all these different styles and formations and nothing ever clicked. But I just don't think he had the luxury of shaping young players the way he did at Ajax to the way he wanted to play. And because of that, we got this in-between counterattacking style. When they tried to play with possession, they looked awful mess. And that's what he left. He left in a mess, and now United are going to have to go into a different direction. And it's a shame because I think when United hired Erik ten Hag, there was a lot of people that were saying, this could be great. He's going to develop youth. He's going to bring back that total football kind of style that we saw him play at Ajax. And it never really got going. Even in that first season when they finished third, they had bright spots, they won a cup, it was never the same style of football that he played at Ajax. And keeping him around this summer, I think Ineos were making kind of the bet that with more players, with Ugarte, with Mesraoui, with Xerxes and Hoyland back fit and Mount back fit, that he would be able, and De Ligt and the addition at the back with Yoro and a fit Martinez, that he would be able to make that jump again and play the football he played at Ajax, and we never saw it. In fact, they've gone backwards, and I think you've seen that because you've seen the dressing room. Just they've lost it. They're not playing for him. That's where you get results this weekend where they're just underperforming. Guys like DeLow having shockers, missing big chances. And the funny thing is there's a world where United don't hit the woodwork in the first half. DeLow takes that chance. They kill the game off, win the game, and he's still on a job. But to what end? You know, it was never going to turn around. And we'll get into how quickly it looks like they're going to bring in Ruben Amorim. Ineos were probably gutted that Ten Hag won the FA Cup in May, I think, because I think they wanted to bring in their own guy, but they won a trophy, and they couldn't sack him because the fans would have, I don't know, had backlash or whatever. It's clear that they were looking at different managers. Ruben Amorim was one of them. It looks like he's set to come in. From a stylistic appointment, I think it suits them. I mean, you've got Manuel Ugarte there, who Ruben Amorim basically created and then sold to PSG. That's a plus. We know there's talent in this team, but again, Amorim is a guy who's never coached in the Premier League, never coached in, you'd call, Europe's top five leagues. It's kind of another, well, we like what he's doing at Sporting, the smaller team, but can he do it at United? Can he do it with big egos and big names? I mean, can he? Is he the right guy? Where else would you have gone? Did they miss the boat on Tuchel? Where's your stance on Amorim?
Yeah, they might have. I think, you know, I don't want to diss him here, but it's a similar appointment, if it happens, to Ten Hag, right? A non-top five league. I think the Portuguese league, you could argue, maybe translates a little better to the Premier League than the Eredivisie, but he's another up-and-coming, exciting manager, young. He's got fresh ideas. I like all that. And I think in this market, you probably do have to go for someone like that. I mean, other than Tuchel, who's now gone, Xavi's out there, but like, I just don't see any glaringly obvious choices that aren't this profile. I mean, the experienced managers, if you want a manager that's experienced, won things, and has been in the Premier League, that it's available. I mean, I can't think of any. So
Jurgen Klopp?
Yeah, right, well, he's just gone to the Red Bull.
Yeah, I know.
So it's tough, right? So I don't mind what they're sort of looking for, but I think you have to be wary that it's a similar profile to what you just had. I think if he can implement what he's doing at Sporting, which Ten Hag wasn't able to implement what he was doing at Ajax at United, if he can do that, what he's doing there, here, then that is a step in the right direction because he plays good football and it would be a style that I think the fans would buy into.
Yeah.
I do think, you know, I'm curious to see how he sets the team up. He likes a back three. I think that suits the back line. It might suit people like DeLow and Mazraoui, who can bomb forward. I'm not sure if it suits everyone in that midfield, like Bruno Fernandes, because you want him in a sort of 10 position, and in a 3-4-3, you'd maybe have to play him sort of as an inverted winger, sort of a wide inside forward. Does that suit him? I'm not sure. And he is their best player, so that's just, you know, I'm nitpicking here, but that is sort of one thing I'd be concerned about. But yeah, Ugarte, Mainu, maybe that really flourishes in this sort of system with three center backs behind them. I think that could work. But again, it's one of these where it is sort of a wild card. You don't know until you really know. He's only done it in the Portuguese league. To be fair to him, Sporting are not Ajax. They don't regularly compete for the league.
True.
They have done since he's come in. They've won the league for the first time in, what, decades or something like that. It's usually Benfica and Porto who sort of pick the league off each other. So I think he's achieved some serious things in that division, to be fair to him. Obviously, Ten Hag did as well at Ajax, but Ajax are, you know, the big cheese in the Eredivisie, really. They were struggling until he came in. But so I think there are some parallels, but the big thing is, can he get them playing some decent football, first and foremost? That has to be – you have to do what Ange has done, what I think Slot has done, what Arteta did initially. You got to get them playing attacking football. Then you can adapt a little bit, but – yeah, that's really what he has to do, because nobody expects the United to get top four now this season, I don't think. Get Europe, play some decent football, we'll see what happens in the summer. I think that has to be the aim, and I think that's achievable, right? It's a very competitive field for top four right now, but I think I've said this before on the pod, the United squad's pretty good, I think. Sure, there's a bit
that's
of a question mark.
Spend 600 right. odd
I mean,
million.
There might be a question mark up front. Are we sold on Xerxes? No. I think Hoyland, you know me, I'm a Hoyland fan. I think he'll get there. Rashford and Garnacho are talented, man. Bruno's really good.
Yeah.
Mainoo is, everybody loves Kobbie Mainoo. Ugarte is, you know, remains to be seen, but
if anyone can get the best out of him, it should be Amorim.
Exactly. And I think they've brought in some, you know, Mazraoui has been great. Deleuze was maybe their best player last season. I think Onana's taken a step forward. I think he looks okay. De Ligt, bit of a question mark, but I think he could be better in a back three. Lissandra, I think, could be great as a left-sided center back. So I think there are pieces, and this is what's different, I think, this time around with United. I look at the squad, and I think, I think a manager like Amorim will think he can take that team to the next level, because I think there is a team there.
And I think Ten Hag looked at the players in his first season and said, I can't play a high line with Harry Maguire. I can't do that. So he played this counterattack style, which I think is a good point to distinguish. And then lastly, I want to touch on the ownership group in Ineos, because, I mean, I've heard all this stuff about cost-cutting, and it's very traditional. Like, a new CEO comes into a business, and they're trying to make it more efficient, and all of a sudden they've spunked £25 million getting rid of the old manager and bringing in a new one. I mean, how willing are they going to be to spend in the summer? I don't know. How hard is it going to be to move on these players that are on these massive contracts? You know, we've seen this before. It's a mess. They've got to sort out. They've got their Barada and Ratcliffe and all of them have got their work cut out for them in Ashworth.
This is why you brought him in, though.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think, I mean, it was almost less than 24 hours was the here we go, Romano, you know, Amorim's coming in, which says to me after their summer work, unless Tuchel was their guy, because he's now gone.
Didn't seem like he was.
It seems that Amorim was the guy that they identified, which is a positive in that they waited and they're going to have to pay the monetary fine for that, and, you know, this dreadful start to the year, maybe sacrificing Champions League football, but at least it seems like they got the guy they wanted. It's not, you know, there have been times where, you know, teams have had to just sack a manager because it's not working, and then, you know, they made I'm looking at, like, Chelsea and Graham Potter at the time where it just didn't seem like he was the right fit. It seems like Amorim's the guy Ineos want. Whether that's the right call remains to be seen, obviously, but, you know, we've got the rest of this season and years to come, potentially, to see if he is.
And he was highly sought after.
He was linked
to Liverpool, linked to West Ham. So that is a good sign that other teams wanted him in. They just couldn't get him.
They couldn't get him. Mid-season, they stumped up the $10 million to bring him in. So we'll see what happens. Big game this weekend between Chelsea and United. We'll come back to that with our combined 11. But first, I want to talk about the big game that happened this past weekend at the Emirates, 2-2 between Arsenal and Liverpool. These games always need that early goal, and it got it through Bukayo Saka. Lovely finish. Van Dijk was able to equalize off a corner, some poor defending from Arsenal. Mikel Merino, who had a great Euros, the big signing, a lot of people kind of forgot about at Arsenal because he was injured. Got injured almost right away. Put them in front again, but it was Mo Salah, as always, scoring a crucial goal to tie things up at 2-2. Probably a result both teams will take, especially Arsenal coming off of Arsenal want to win the game. But coming off a difficult result at Bournemouth, you couldn't afford to lose two in a row in this title race to a title rival. And if you're Liverpool, you're on the road at Arsenal, you take the point. more positive signs, I think, from Slot's team to go 1-0 down at the Emirates. Heads could drop. They showed some resiliency, got the equalizer right away. Darwin had a nice assist to Salah to set up the second goal. What did you make of this game and where it leaves these two teams for the rest of the season in the title race?
Yeah, I thought based on sort of the flow of the game, it was a bit of a missed opportunity for Arsenal at home to take all 3 points. They led twice, and I thought they played well. I thought it was a good performance, especially in that first half. I thought they were the better team, and they could have won the game. Yeah, the injuries hampered them. I think we have to acknowledge that. But, you know, when you're already a few points behind Liverpool and City and you play that well in that first half, I think you've got to go and win the game. You got to see it out. So I think they'll be pleased with the way they played and how they attacked Liverpool at times. But I think Liverpool will feel the better of the two teams after that result. So they were down at halftime. Like I said, I thought they were second best. But to be fair to them, they came out in the second half. They gained some momentum and got the equalizer eventually. So, you know, from there, Arsenal just couldn't quite go on and nick the winner. But, you know, if you're Arsenal, you're leading twice. I think they will be gutted that they couldn't see it out. It's not, I think you maybe take a point before the game, but because of how well they played, and maybe they'll be disappointed, then go at them a bit more in the second half. I think Liverpool will probably feel a bit better about that. But, you know, a lot of people are talking about how Arsenal have evolved into a defensive team, and I don't think this is quite, you know, Mourinho's Chelsea by any means, but I think it's important to acknowledge that they have evolved, and Arteta is not a carbon copy of Pep. And I agree with what Jamie Carragher was saying on the overlap on the fan debate, where, you know, you can't beat City at their own game, right? I think it's a good sign that three teams are, you know, going for the league, and they're playing differently. They're all something a bit different. Slot has brought something different to Liverpool, which I like. So it might be less entertaining, you know, in the long run, because maybe these games aren't as open. But I like that Arteta is trying something different and making sure his team is solid at the back first and foremost, maybe, and harder to beat. And I have no issue with that, and I don't see why they can't win the league playing like that. I think they are still an attacking side. Maybe they don't have the attacking options that City do. So maybe that just means they have to find different ways to win games. And, you know, it was sort of another nearly game for Arsenal. I don't think they can afford tons of these nearly sort of wins against the big teams. But you have to adapt to win games. And with the injuries they've had, they have adapted. And, you know, sure, it was a 2-2, relatively high-scoring draw. But I think they still look solid at the back. I think they are still themselves. And the threat going forward is still there. I kind of wanted to acknowledge that because everybody's saying they're a defensive team. Now, I don't quite agree with that. But yeah, I mean, I thought Liverpool were kind of there for the taking, especially based on that first half. Arsenal couldn't quite get over the line. But again, it was a good performance.
Yeah, it was. And you bring up an interesting point about how Arsenal have evolved under Arteta. And I want to think back to when they signed Gabriel Jesus. I remember that first game. I think it was at Palace. And they were just unbelievable going forward with Jesus, because the year before, everyone had said they were missing that striker. You know, Lacazette was playing there and it wasn't quite the right guy. You had Aubameyang, but they brought in Jesus and it seemed like everything just clicked. But they were a bit leaky at the back and they scored tons of goals, but they were conceding more. And I think, and then Jesus went down with an injury, and we never quite saw him come fully back into the fold. They moved on. They brought in Havertz, who's done great things in an Arsenal shirt, you know, post his first kind of two-ish months. And I think credit has to go to Arteta, because I think what we're seeing with Ange is a stubbornness to play that attacking style of football without, you know, being more cautious. I think Arteta has struck the balance of still having dangerous players in attack like Saka, like Martinelli, Trossard off the bench, Havertz clinical as ever, but not compromising the back line. And whether they can score enough goals to win the league remains to be seen. I think they can. I think you think they can too. And it's going to take everything they've got to beat City again. We know that. You know, City without Rodri, we know, who just won the Ballon d'Or. Is that going to pop up? Is that going to come back to haunt them? Possibly. But I think credit has to go to Arteta for how he's changed the philosophy around Arsenal, because I think he could have easily said, you know, I want to play possession-based, attacking, free-flowing, and I'm going to stick to that, like a coach like Ange has done. But he's kind of seen that that's not quite the way to win a title. Now, I know he hasn't won a title yet, but he's gotten very close, and he's getting ever closer. And it's great to see. The common denominator between Liverpool, City, and Arsenal is that they dominate games. But like you said, they do it in different ways. And they're all effective. And we're set up for potentially a three-horse race. You know, we were in this position last year, and Liverpool faded away. If I had to guess, I'd probably say that scenario is most likely again this year in terms of slot. Can he maneuver the Champions League late in the year and the Premier League? He hasn't done that in this league before, whereas we know Arteta and Pep have. If I'm going to make a prediction for who's going to stick it out, I think it probably will be Arsenal and City again, just at the top of the table with Liverpool fading off before. But there's nothing that's me inferring based on, you know, a lack of previous experience for slot. I think if they continue the way they're playing, there's no reason they can't be in this, you know, until the end of the season. So an entertaining fixture, and we're well poised, hopefully, for an entertaining title race, which will hopefully Liverpool or Arsenal lead to someone other than City, because I can't stomach it. I know you can't stomach Liverpool winning it, but I can't stomach City any longer. So with that being said, we're going to talk about two teams who in the Premier League era dominated the top of the league. Haven't done that for a good few years now. They're facing off this weekend, Chelsea and Man United. We touched on this game at the beginning of the show. Chelsea picked up a nice win at home against Newcastle. Enzo Maresca's team taking shape. They're going to play, I think, a Man United team led by Ruud van Nistelrooy. Will he be in our combined 11 that we're going to do as a draft? So how this is going to work is we don't want any repeats. So you can we'll flip a coin, whoever gets the first pick. And you can pick whatever position you want. You know, usually with these combined 11s, we go goalkeeper to striker, but we're going to do whatever position you want.
Any order, any player.
Yep, any order, any player. Premier League era.
Premier League era.
So 1992, 93 onwards. All right, I'm going to be heads. Harrison yes. will be tails. We're going to flip the coin.
Okay.
Heads is the call, so I will take first pick.
Okay.
All right. So
are we going back and forth or like snake trap? Well, you can't really. There's not much snaking to
do. I guess we'll just go back and forth. Yeah. We'll just go back and forth. All right. I'm going to start things off. There's a lot of choices here. I'm going to start in an important position. I think. Yeah. I'm going to go center mid. I'm going to take an all-time great, Frank Lampard, to just be my number eight. He's going to get goals. He can be the captain of a team. I mean, you're looking at one of the best Premier League goal-scoring midfielders, or not Premier League, just goal-scoring midfielders in the history of the game. Didn't really do it as Chelsea manager, but he's in my team.
Has to be, yeah. It's certainly a good pick, an early pick, well worth picking. He was on my board, of course, in that position. I have to tell you, this is it's not tough because there's a lot of options, but it's tough to decide where to go because there are so many options. There's not really a lack of players in any particular position. I think one player that I kind of have to have in my team, I think he is maybe the most talented player to ever play in the Premier League potentially. Maybe doesn't have the longevity, but in his early years at United, he was electric on the wing. I'm not sure what wing I'm going to play him on yet, but I am going to take Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yep. Okay.
I think you have to take him at some point early because of what he can do. He was just sensational for Man United in those early 2000s years. Played on the right initially, can play on the left, obviously. So I'm not sure where I'm going to play him just yet, but Cristiano Ronaldo has to be in this team.
It's interesting you talk about where you're going to play him because there's another left winger that I would be tempted to take, but if I know you're not going to take another left winger, then I can wait on him. But if you take him and play Ronaldo on the right,
this is the strategy.
You got dangerous flanks.
Or am I playing him up front?
Could leave. Yeah, you can play Ronaldo as a nine. You sure can, especially when upon his return, that's where he played. You got me thinking now. Definitely got me thinking. I'm going to steer clear of the midfield because I think there's so many options.
Yeah.
Same with center back. And same with a lot of these positions. I think I have to take Eden Hazard just because of how good he was at his peak. His final season at Chelsea, when he moved to Real Madrid, he was a Galactico. He was 100 million pounds, one of the best mercurial talents in the world, just consistent week in, week out. Injuries hampered him in his career. His Real Madrid career was just disastrous and never really figured things out. I mean, is he even still playing? I think he might be retired. I mean, it's so sad to see how his career declined so fast. But in a Chelsea shirt, I mean, he was just...
Best player in the league.
He was truly the best player in the league. Magnificent to watch. I'm taking Hazard as my left winger. Taking no chances that you get Hazard and Ronaldo.
That was a good shot. I was thinking about it. There is another option on the left that I will hold off on because now that sort of slot is open. But another player, probably my favorite player on this list, maybe my favorite ever Premier League player, I shouldn't say non-Everton because it's Wayne Rooney. Again.
There's a guy I just didn't have on my depth chart.
So he can obviously – I think I might actually go 4-4-2 here. I think I might go 4-4-2. I'll put Rooney as my sort of number 10 of the two strikers. I think I will pick a number 9, or maybe I won't. I don't know. I'm going to stop talking so I can, so I don't reveal anything. But, yeah, Wayne Rooney, I mean, just Man United's all-time leading goal scorer, maybe their greatest ever player. Certainly one of the Premier League's greatest ever players up there with the likes of Henry. I mean, I just love Wayne, of course, because he's a Scouser and an Everton fan, but... What he did in a United shirt in so many different positions, can play with Ronaldo, who is in my team, and they dovetailed so well together. He puts in the hard yards. There's going to be a lot of prima donnas in this team. So I think you need a guy like Wazza who's going to put in the hard yards, who's going to press, hunt the ball down, and also have the quality to score plenty of goals. So Rooney playing in some sort of central role. I'm not quite sure where yet. But he'll be my second pick with Ronaldo.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. So you've taken 2 United, I've taken 2 Chelsea. Interesting start. I'm going to mix that up just because I want to get some mixed color. I don't want too many Chelsea guys in midfield. And while there is a lot of depth at the... there's so much depth there. You can't really go wrong at center backs. I feel like I need to steer clear. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go on the right. No, I'm gonna take my CDM. I'm gonna take my number 6, one of the best in the modern Premier League era. Won a Premier League with Leicester City, and then did it again with Chelsea the year after that. N'Golo Kanté, everywhere on the pitch. Would love to see him in a midfield with Frank Lampard. The damage those two could do. It's another Chelsea player, but I do give him the edge just because a guy like Roy Keane is there. Can't say I ever saw Roy Keane play. I know how good he was, fabled he was. I'm going to take Kanté. Just the pace, the endeavor, the energy. He was unreal. He goes into my defensive midfield role.
Great shout. Doesn't get talked about enough in terms of those all-time Premier League 11s. Yeah. He's in the conversation with Keane and Vieira, I think. He was on my board. Definitely thought about him. So you've got now Kanté and Lampard in the midfield.
Yes.
Okay, pretty solid. All Chelsea.
So I'm looking at these United guys. I'm like, I think he'll still be there in a couple rounds. I think Chelsea. Think about it.
That's the problem when there's only 2 people doing a draft.
Yeah.
But yes. Okay. So let's see. I've got some 4. I haven't taken a midfielder yet. You obviously have. So I think it's now time that we move to the back line. And I think there is someone in one of these positions who is by far and away the best player on this list in that position. And I think that's Ashley Cole. I think there are some great United picks here. Not a ton of great Chelsea picks. But Ashley Cole is England's best ever left back. I think he's in that conversation. Probably not the best ever in the world. But in that conversation with the likes of Maldini and he's just... He was an unbelievable player for Chelsea under Mourinho and in those teams. So I think he beats out the United competition pretty comfortably, actually, in this position. Ashley Cole is my left back, my first Chelsea player. So.
All right, interesting. Yeah, I had Cole on my list, obviously. I think you're right. He is clearing away the best player at that position. I thought you were going to say someone else for a second, so I'm going to take him before you take him as well. At center back, I'm going to go with Rio Ferdinand, first United player. I think Rio was one of the best in the game, imposing figure, could play out from the back, was a stalwart under Fergie, obviously bounced around some other Premier League teams, started at West Ham in our academy. But I don't think you're really topping Rio Ferdinand. You've got other guys there, but I think he is the cream of the crop in terms of central defenders among these two teams.
He's the guy. And to make sure you don't get the other guy, I think I have to take John Terry.
Okay.
Because he is – I think him and Rio are the best two center backs the Premier League has ever seen. In terms of longevity, what they've achieved.
Yeah.
I think John Terry gets underrated for his ability on the ball and things like that. I think he was obviously not as tidy as Rio, but – a really well-rounded player, a questionable character, but a hell of a defender. So John Terry is going straight into my first center back position alongside Ashley Hull. Good partnership there.
Very good.
So I like that bit of chemistry in the team.
All right, moving up, I'm going to jump back up to right wing. I'm playing a 4-3-3. This guy is probably more suited to a right midfielder in a 4-4-2, but I'm going to go with Ryan Giggs. And that peg of his. There were a couple guys I was thinking of. I think Giggs is just iconic. He did it for Fergie. Did it for a long time. Did it at the highest level. Obviously leads, I think, some of the assist charts. Definitely goals and assist charts in the Premier League, in the Premier League era. I don't know if he's technically if he's been inducted into the Hall of Fame.
He must be.
Surely. So I'm taking Giggs and Hazard on the two flanks.
Interesting. So you're playing very much inverted wingers. Yeah, yes. Giggs was on my list. I was thinking about him for my other wing slot, but maybe that means I have to shift things around. Let's see. I need another center back. I need a right back, goalie. Nobody's talked about goalie. Strikers. You've still got some striker position available. Difficult. I think I really want... Although you've got midfielders, so I can hold off on that. Do I commit to this 4-4-2? That is the question. I think I will. I think I'm going to pick another striker before you do. A lot of options here. I'm not quite sold on one outstanding... Rooney was like my outstanding sort of guy.
There's a bunch of United guys that are kind of all in the same level.
I think I'm going to go... with the Chelsea guy. I think Didier Drogba has to be the first striker off the board. Yeah. He was sensational, just a big game player. Doesn't have the goal tally to, you know, your Henrys, your Shearers, your Rooneys even, but Rooney's there up alongside him. Drogba has played in many a 4-4-2 and, you know, with a number 10 behind him. So a big game player, and this team will be playing in big games. So, yeah, Didier Drogba, he was sensational. I always think of those scenes in Munich, man. He was quite the handful, and just an elite
big
finisher.
Game player.
And just an elite footballer in general. Probably Chelsea's greatest number nine, at least
I'd
in the Premier
so.
League era.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I can't even remember.
Costa, maybe.
Yeah, you'd have him over there. I mean, the United options are more interesting.
Yeah.
I think he is the Chelsea guy here. So, yeah, Rooney and Drogba in a front two. Interesting to see how that would work.
Yeah, interesting pick there. It's a good pick because now I'm kind of left with a bunch of guys who are all great in their own right. I'm not sold on any of them, though, in particular. So we're going to hold off on striker for now. I'm going to just double, triple down on my midfield. You are not getting through this midfield. I've got a bit of everything. I've got the goals in Frank Lampard. I've got the defensive challenges and the work rate in N'Golo Kanté. Now I'm getting the passing.
Mm.
One of the best passers of a ball you'll ever see. Paul Scholes rounds out my midfield three. Good luck beating that midfield.
That's very solid. I think... Okay, now... Well, I have no midfielders. I was definitely planning on taking Paul Scholes, but there are options. What else have we got? I think I'll go right back here. I think I will take Gary Neville.
Okay.
I think he is the best right back of the Premier League era, arguably. Chelsea have got a few options here, which you'll have to deal with. But,
yes,
I
will.
But yeah, I think the conversation is usually Neville or Trent Alexander-Arnold, so I think that goes to show his quality. And maybe I'll just pick a right-sided player ahead of him that might dovetail well. But we'll see. Yeah, Gary Neville, an excellent player. The overlap, you know, with Beckham, of course. That's a crucial attribute I want in my 4-4-2 system. So I'll take Gazza at right back.
Okay.
With Ashley Cole on the other side. What a team.
What a team. All right, I'm in an interesting spot here. I won't lie, because I like a couple center backs here that I like both of them. Left back, I don't have to worry about. Striker, I don't have to worry about. Goalie, I do. Goalie. This is interesting.
Two great picks.
I think there's three.
There's three.
I think there's three. Two of them more longevity based. One, I think, at his peak was better than the other two. Although maybe not. No, I'm just gonna do it. I'm going United. I'm going David De Gea. I think David De Gea in his pomp was best shotstopper in the world. I think. I know you've got the likes.
See that coming.
The likes of Schmeichel, Cech, Courtois. I'm ditching them all. Okay. I think at his best, David De Gea kept some of the worst United teams post Fergie in games like you wouldn't believe. I remember that game at Arsenal where he just almost single-handedly kept them in games. I'm remembering an Arsenal fan TV clip. You know, David De Gea could save the Titanic, I think was the quote from DT. And he could because he was that good in his prime. Things went off the boil towards the end, I know. But I'm not going to take Schmeichel. The guy, he ended up playing for City towards the end. Courtois wanted out of Chelsea. Cech, I think, is a fair pick. I think he was great for a long time. Did make the move to Arsenal after his peak. But I'm going to go De Gea. I have a soft spot for De Gea.
Very nice. Okay, I like that. Interesting angle. I think I will go with my second center half because you're sort of done in the midfield. My forward areas are pretty good. So, a lot of options here. Two that I'm sort of deliberating. I think I will go with Nemanja Vidic.
Okay, yeah.
I think he is maybe third best out of, you know, Terry, Ferdinand. I think he comes in third there. Some great Chelsea picks, too, that I won't sort of allude to. I'll let you do that. But Nemanja Vidic, you know, him and Ferdinand was a frightening partnership. Mm-hmm. And I know him and Terry are a bit more maybe of the similar style in terms of the, you know, just front foot, headed out, could score a goal, too. But I just can't not pick him. He's a frightening prospect. And, you know, we need some out-and-out defenders in this team with the flary front four that I will have. That's going to leave us a little bit open. So Terry and Vidic at the back for me. That rounds out my back four. Neville, John Terry, Nemanja Vidic, and Ashley Cole. Very solid.
Yeah. The format of this draft is peculiar because now I've got right back, center back, and left back, and you don't have to pick any of them. And striker, you don't have to pick, but that's just the way that things have fallen. But we'll go back and circle back and see whose team is better. I'm going to finish off my center back with a guy who partnered John Terry in the best defense in Premier League history. I think they conceded, I want to say 15 goals the entire year, and that's Ricardo Carvalho, who I can't say I've seen, but just is imperious in his reputation alongside John Terry and that Jose Mourinho team. And you know, if you're a part of that back line who conceded that few goals, that he means business. So him and Rio are my two center backs.
Interesting that we've split up the partnerships here. Yeah. Right? I kind of like that. Yeah. You know, that's, all right. I will go to midfield now, finally. Roy Keane's in this team. He has to be. I think he's the outstanding DM, sort of center mid, outside of N'Golo Kante. Thought about Claude Makélélé, but Roy Keane's legacy is just outstanding, and he's played next to a lot of the guys in my team already, so I think that's sort of an obvious one for me. At the heart of midfield, which is only going to be a midfield two, really, with Rooney ahead of them. So we need some stability in
there. Need some legs. All right. I'm going to go with now my left back, which you also have done. I'm going to go Dennis Irwin. Now, this is a guy, could have taken Patrice Evra, could have taken Marcus Alonso, I suppose. Another Chelsea guy, but Irwin is the name that was in those Fergie teams. He was the left back. I know Evra played a bit. He was on my list, more of a good vibes guy than a good player guy, Patrice Evra. Although in his prime, he was a good player. But Dennis Irwin, you know what you're going to get from him. A pro's pro, quality on the ball, can whip it in delivery on that left peg. He's my left back.
Yes, good pick. I was thinking about Everett too from United, but that's a good battle there between those two. I'll pick my midfielder. Deliberating between two Chelsea guys here, one of which is an elite passer of the ball that I think I'm going to go with because I need someone who can spray it around, and that's Cesc Fabregas.
Oh, I didn't have Cesc on my team.
You know, you could argue maybe his peak was at Barcelona or at Arsenal before.
He was still quality.
He was sensational in that Conte team, I think it was, with Costa up front. And just an adds a bit of finesse to this team, which is a lot of, you know, we've got Roy Keane next to him who can cover the ground. But yeah, get it to Cesc to sort of spray it around for us to the wide areas. We've got Ronaldo running, Rooney, Drogba. I think that is a frightening prospect. Was also thinking about Michael Ballack.
Yep, he was on my
SCN,
list.
SCN, John Obi Mikel. You know, there's a lot of good Chelsea options in that position. But I remember Cesc Fabregas the best, so I wanted to have him in here.
All right, I'm going to finish up my back line with a right back. This guy won a couple of Premier Leagues, great longevity, excellent professional. That's Cesar Azpilicueta of Chelsea, obviously. Couple other guys. I mean, who did you have down other than Gary Neville? I was struggling here.
Ivanovic.
Ivanovic, yeah. I think Azpilicueta was a cut above Ivanovic, in my opinion.
Great captain.
He was a captain, a leader. Yeah, he's going to finish out my back line. A couple of Spaniards in there with De Gea, Azpilicueta. They'll be on the same page.
Yes, we like that.
Love the chemistry. I've got one position. I'm just going to do it because you don't have
to. I'll finish off my two.
This was interesting. The striker, a bunch of United guys. Van Nistelrooy, Cantona, Michael Owen.
Tevez,
Ibrahimovic.
Berbatov.
A lot of guys. In the end, I went with Eric Cantona just because of the aura. I mean, he's a bizarre fella, Eric Cantona. Yeah. Some of these post-career speeches he's gave is really just interesting. But on the pitch, he was brilliant. His days at Leeds were great. And, of course, for United, he was phenomenal too. So he rounds out my 11. Who are your – I think you've got two positions left.
Yeah, keeper and right wing. I am playing Ronaldo on the left.
Okay.
That means I'm either playing – Gary Neville's best mate, David Beckham, on the right, or
Cole Palmer.
I'm gonna go. You know, I'm gonna switch things up. Arjen Robben.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Arjen Robben, because you know I've already got sort of Ronaldo inverting on one side. Let's mirror it on the other side. Let's have Robben going inside. Gary Neville can still get on the overlap. Not to fear, Gaz. You know, you still get forward and whip in some balls. But you know, we've got Fabregas in the team who, although plays a very different position sort of to Beckham, I think does a similar role, right? Similar kind of finesse to the players in terms of that long-range passing. So I want someone who can really bomb down the flank and cut inside and curl it top corner. A little bit of a different profile, maybe more suited to the modern game, perhaps. But it's an attacking team with Robben, Fabregas, Roy Keane, Ronaldo, Rooney, Drogba. I mean, that is outstanding. But yeah, I wanted to talk about him because, sure, I remember him a bit more in his Bayern days, but was, of course, a great Chelsea player his time there.
I can't say I remember him playing for Real Madrid.
Yeah, he was there as well. So he's been around, but, of course, really cemented himself at Bayern Munich. Yeah. And those years at Bayern, he was just outstanding.
He was
a one-trick pony, but it worked every time. You know, he's just – I love that kind of player. I really remember him and Ribéry quite well on the flanks for Bayern.
They were
outstanding. So I'll go with Arjen Robben, the Dutchman, who doesn't get talked about enough, I think, in these sort of great winger conversations. Maybe because he's not the most sexy kind of guy, but he's effective.
I also think it's because not so long ago he was still playing. Like within the last 5 or 6 years, I think as time moves on. Same with Conte. These guys who it's... You know, as we're growing up, they were still active. You know, you didn't talk about as all-time greats because they were still playing. So, all right, let's go through this.
And Petr Cech is my goalie.
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
Forgot about that. I got Petr Cech. Great pick. The head gear can't go wrong there.
No.
And I think it's only fair that there was one man managing both of these teams at the same time. And that's Jose Mourinho.
Oh, yeah.
There's only one Chelsea and United guy. The chaos that is Mourinho. All right, let's go through them now. You want to go position by position or team by team?
We'll rattle off the teams. You go first.
All right, so in goal, the Spaniard David De Gea. Right back, another Spaniard, Azpilicueta. A center back, too, of Rio Ferdinand and Ricardo Carvalho. Good luck getting through there. Dennis Irwin shaping out the back four. A stellar midfield three of N'Golo Kante, Frank Lampard, and Paul Scholes. A little bit of everything. You got a traditional right winger in Ryan Giggs, a bastard number nine in Eric Cantona, and then the skill, flair, brilliance of Eden Hazard on the left flank. That's my 11.
Like it. I've gone 4-4-2. Petr Cech in goal, the monster shot stopper. Gary Neville at right back. John Terry and Nemanja Vidic in the middle with Ashley Cole at left back. A midfield four or a midfield two with two wide players of from right to left. Arjen Robben, Roy Keane, Cesc Fabregas, and Cristiano Ronaldo, and then a front two of Wayne Rooney and Didier Drogba. I would love to see that team play.
It'd be fun. It'd be a lot of fun. Just goes to show that some of the depth these guys have got over the last, you know, 20, well, 30 years now.
Fun to reminisce about all these great players. Yeah.
We'll see if these two teams can get back to the pinnacle. Seems like Chelsea are closer, maybe, I want to say, than United. But who knows? Could Ruben Amorim one day make his case to be the manager of the Chelsea versus United combined 11?
Here's
we'll
my
see.
Prediction. Cole Palmer will be in this conversation one day.
Crazy. I had Cole Palmer written down. Ooh. I knew it was way too soon. But I was thinking of right wingers, and I was just trying to rack my brain. I was like, you know, it was like Pedro. I could put Pedro if I wanted to. I didn't think of Robin. I just didn't think of him.
You don't think of him in Chelsea.
To your point. Exactly. You don't. I think of Bayern. I think of the orange of the Dutch national team. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of The Inswinger. Thoroughly enjoyed that draft. We'll see how United and Chelsea battle it out without Ten Hag at the helm, obviously, for United. But until next time, thank you for listening.